We're good? All right. So we are continuing our study of Perek Chai, the 18th chapter of Tanya. And we are talking about faith. Where does it come from? How does it work? What does it mean to have spiritual genes for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? So we described in our previous class that the Shedesh, that the root source of this Ahava, comes from the Eser Sfirot Kedoshot, from the 10, so to speak, Sfirot. And the 10 Sfirot become the source for all of our spirituality or the makeup of our soul. And we actually described how each of the 10 Sfirot are comprised of 10 Sfirot, and those themselves are comprised of 10. And then within that, we have 5 levels of Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. There's a whole enormous, so to speak, kaleidoscope of possibility, of spiritual possibilities. And we said that even the lowest of souls, the nefesh, of malchus, of asiya, which is the lowest of the lowest, the lowest possible source of soul, that also is ultimately rooted in chachma, da'atzilus. Chachma, the neshama da'atzilus. So that means that even though the range of souls may be very, very wide, and even though there may be all different kinds of souls, nonetheless, we're told that even the lowest of soul, as long as you're still on the chart, as long as you're still part of this greater gestalt, so then you are plugged in to the same source. If you're plugged into the same source, that's how you get this ahava, that's how you get this profound sense of yearning and desire to be close to Hashem. That's where you get your sense of awe and reverence. That's where ultimately our faith comes from. And where is it? Where is the ultimate source? The ultimate source is in Chachma of Atzilus. Chachma of Atzilus is the highest level. So we talk about Chachma, the Chachma d'Atzilus. Now everybody knows that a Chacham is a wise person, a person who's learned, a person who's knowledgeable. So Chachma then is wisdom. That's how it's freely translated. Comes the question, essentially, and again, this you really needed to be at last week's class to fully grasp the profundity of what we're about to say now, but essentially, all of our faith hails back to Chachma. So if it goes back to Chachma, well, that's the origin of the Eser Sfirot. That's where all of reality begins. So every neshama has to be plugged in at some point to what we call Chachma. So if that's the case, that means that we grasp Hashem, or we're connected to Hashem through what is known as Chachma. Yeah, what's the problem with that? Oh, there's a very big problem with that. Because we know when it comes to Hashem that there is no human wisdom that can fathom Him. And we know that the concept of God is beyond human fathomability and intellectual possibility. And now you're telling me, how do I grasp God? Through Chachma. This is a problem. So this is the underlying issue that the Alter Rebbe now is going to address by explaining to you that Chachma is not what you think it is. Hine ha-chachma hu moker ha-seichel v'ha-havana. Chachma is the origin. It's the source of intelligence. It's a source of understanding. But Chachma, in and of itself, is not wisdom or really intellectuality or understanding. V'hi, the Chachma itself, is lemaila mehabina. It's higher than bina, which represents understanding, contemplation, and a full grasp of a concept. Which bina is havanas haseichel vahasagasi. Bina is the state of mind or the power wherewithal to be able to grasp an idea and to be able to properly assimilate it and properly develop it and properly ingest it. The hachochma, conversely, when we talk about wisdom, hu lemaila mehavana vahasaga. Chochma is higher than havana. It's higher than understanding. It's loftier than grasping a concept. Vehi makor lahem. It is, though, the source for them. So, let's recap some of the things we learned many, many chapters ago. In chapter 3 of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe begins to describe how the soul is comprised. Chapter 18. He talks about how the soul, of what is the soul comprised. And there, the Alter Rebbe explains that the soul is made up of 10 faculties, 10 soul powers. And he talks about the idea of wisdom, and he talks about the idea of understanding, and he talks about the idea of das, which we're going to freely translate as knowledge, although it's a very poor translation, and then he talks about the 7 emotions that are engendered as a result of it. So this Bechina of Chachma, we're now going to return to the idea of Chachma and Bina. Chachma and Bina are the original building blocks of all consciousness, of all intellectual activity. Now Chachma is when a person grasps an idea. It's like you could explain something. I don't understand what you're saying. Explain it again. At a certain moment, a person gets, aha, I got it. And at that point in time, when there's an aha, I got it, that's a chachma moment. That's what's called in English an epiphany, or a light bulb effect, or, oh, I suddenly got it. I didn't understand it before. I heard it explained once. I heard it explained twice. Now, suddenly, everything just like snapped into place. And, you know, in Yiddish we say, it's leitzachap. Ah. Now I know what you're saying. I got it. Having said that, even though a person gets it, it doesn't really mean a person could explain it. You got it? Could you explain it to me? Not necessarily. In fact, oftentimes when the got it moment comes, I still don't have the explain it moment. Because it's a big jump from got it to explain it. Now the second step is when a person says, okay, well, what exactly did I get? I get it that I got it. What did I get? I need to understand this. And a person now goes back to try to analyze this idea and try to understand it in its details, so it becomes what we would refer to as something that's articulable. You can share this idea, you can speak about it, you can write about it, you can convey it, you can explain it, because it's not just an I got it moment, but you actually understand it in the details. So there's the lightning rod, so to speak, the flash of inspiration. That's the idea before it's clear to you, but you don't really understand it. You don't have a clarity, but it's clear to you. You just know it is so. It's just like when a person sees something. When you see it, you see it. What are you going to tell you? I don't see it? Of course I see it. It takes a moment. Everybody sees it. Then the question is, what really happened over here? And that takes analysis and contemplation and thought and so on and so forth. So Chachma, in and of itself, is not really Hasaga. In fact, when you have the light bulb moment, you don't understand it yet. You have the possibility of understanding, but you didn't develop your idea yet. So the Chachma itself is transcendent of Havana v'Hasaga. V'zeu Lashon. This is the expression, the language that's used, because in Hebrew, every word is very valuable and meaningful. And the etymology of a word is not just how it developed or which word it was conjuncted from or how many languages end up getting kind of conflated to produce a particular word, but rather in Hebrew, every word is exact. And in Hebrew, when we talk about Chachma, the language, the syntax of Chachma is comprised of two Hebrew letters, Koyach Mo. Koyach Mo means a power of what? That's literally how it translates. Shahu, that is to say, that when Chachma grasps an idea, Shahu Masha'ene Musa Gumuvan, it's not clear, it's not understood. It isn't yet grasped in the frame or terms of what we call intellectuality. It's not really something which I understand with an intellectual clarity. Rather, I'm able to grasp it. But the moment after I grasp it, the next question I say, what was that? I had that lightning bolt moment. Somehow everything became clear to me. What did I just know? What was that epiphany? And because a person follows by asking, what was that? Obviously, he didn't understand it. A person says, ma nishtana. Why is things different? Ma means what? What is this? It also comes out of nowhere. The idea, you can't slowly build up to an idea, slowly add little details until you're finally, your idea is now, you're ready for the light bulb moment. Where does the idea come from? In a flash, out of nowhere. So this is the idea of ma. There's this idea well within us, and the idea well within us produces ideas that come seemingly out of the oblivion, out of nowhere. So you ask what the koyach is, you cannot really describe the details of this ability to intuit or come up with ideas. It comes like it's ma'at. What is that? Where did that come from? But it came from somewhere. That's called chachma. That's called koyach ma. That's called the power. That's called the source of our intellectuality. So the word of chachma then, is explaining why and what chachma is. V'lachein mislabish ba'ir and save baruch hu. And that's exactly why Chachma can serve as the envelope to contain the presence of Hashem, the idea of divinity. Because when it comes to divinity, we have this clear statement, the less machashava tfisa beklal. Human fathomability is moot. our minds cannot grasp God. Now, usually, people don't know Chassidus when they read this. They think that means God's ways are a mystery. Why did the good people suffer? Why did the bad people prosper? Well, less machshava. God's very deep. We can't understand God. God has a bigger plan. He sees more things and so on and so forth. But that's actually, it's not incorrect, but it's incomplete. It's much more than that. It's not just that God sees a bigger picture. You know, you could have a soldier who's part of a massive operation on a war theater, and he's told to do something. And from his vantage point, it makes absolutely no sense. It's going to endanger all of his troops. It's going to put himself, it's going to imperil his life. He doesn't even know if he'll come out alive. And it seems totally counterintuitive, counterproductive to winning this battle. If the soldier does not listen, does not follow orders, he is a candidate for being court-martialed. Why? Why? Because he has to trust his generals. The general has a big picture. The general is looking at one war theater, numerous war theaters at the same time. And the general has a plan which is based on knowledge that's far beyond what the individual private or colonel knows, and that's what he made his decision on. Sometimes his job is just to create a diversion, because he doesn't know the general is planning to open up a new front somewhere else, and this small expeditionary force is going to go out, and they will suffer heavy losses, but that's war, there's no choice. And that's going to create a diversion, but that's going to open up a possibility for a counterattack somewhere far away, or some other reality, but the soldier doesn't know that. What does the soldier have to do? You do what you're told to do. Does that mean that the general's mind is beyond understandability? No. Someday, when the war is over and the history books get written and they'll go back, the soldier will go back and say, I was there. I was at that beach then. I didn't understand. Now I understand. 30 years later, now the secrets are revealed. Now I found out what was going on. Now I found out the information they picked up. Wow, now I figured it out. So it's not really beyond his fathomability. It's quite fathomable. In fact, even when he is in his state of misunderstanding, he can also imagine himself, this has got to make sense somewhere. Or say to himself, I hope somebody knows what they're doing. He's got to trust. Sometimes it could come out as a terrible blunder. You find that 30 years later, the general was asleep with the switches. True, true. Yeah, the army can't function like that. You can't second guess. You get an order, you have to follow orders. Now that is not the concept of beyond fathomability. It's simply the general has a bigger picture. He's sitting in a different place. He has a different vantage point. There's like a cute example about this from the Chafetz Chaim, that a guy comes to shul, he doesn't understand why this guy gets an aliyah and that guy gets an aliyah, what's going on, right? He doesn't know that the gabbai has a whole thing, there's issues and mises, and he's trying to balance from all sides. Chafetz Chaim said, like, you don't have to second guess the gabbai always. Okay, a simple level, it's a nice cute mashal, it fits the idea, there's things we don't see, things we don't know, okay. But when we learn Pnimius HaTeiru, we find out that Les Machashuv HaTfisa BeKlal means that what you think is intelligence has nothing to do with God's intelligence. Our reality of intelligence is built within, made up of certain amino acids of intelligence, certain realities, certain basic building blocks. So certain realities that forms are what we call reasonable. But when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of that is off the table. Because it's not a deeper, it's not a more profound, it's not a more powerful intellect, it's an entirely different level. People say, well, what does that mean? We don't know. Precisely, we don't know. We don't know. And the difference between is in no way a comparison between us and Hashem. Because the truth is, before Hashem, us and the animal are essentially equal. So they tell a story that there was this goat, a herd of goats back. So the goats used to know that on Sunday morning they get special delicacy. What happened? The chalon pot would soak a whole night, big chalon pot. And then they would empty the chalon pot into the trough and then add some other water. But the water was very good. The goats loved the water. So they had a program. They knew Sunday morning, they raced to the trough who could get there first, and the goats would enjoy for them what was a delicious breakfast. This was the highlight of the week. One week it happened that the chalon pot being taken out to the trough spilled. Okay, the farmer still has to feed the goats. So he filled it up with water. The goats came racing over and they excitedly They put their mouths down to the trough, and it's just water. It's no chalant. So the goats amongst themselves were saying, that owner, he must have drunk the water himself this time. In their minds, it's a metaphor. In their minds, what else could the water be? This is a treasure. This is delicious water. And now it's missing. Must be the owner drank it. Well, obviously, the farmer, to him, that's dishwater. It's actually garbage. He just was, those days, he couldn't just turn on a spigot to get water. It was a pain in the neck to get water. Why should he waste the water? But the point would be then that the goat's value system or the goat's reality or intellectual gestalt is so far away from the human reality, like, he says ridiculous things. Okay? It's like people sitting and judging God, and people making pronouncements of if there is a God, if there's not a God, if God is kind, if God is not kind. We have no clue what we're talking about. We would do much better to shut our mouths and stop saying foolish things because we're totally clueless. Like that example of the three blind mice who are holding onto the foot of an elephant. One swears it's a rock, and one swears it's a tree, and one swears it's a shrub. But in fact, it's an elephant, but nobody knows. But that's not the point here. The point is not just we're missing some information. The point is not we need a little more vision. The point is what we call intelligence and what's called intelligence from God's vantage point have nothing to do with one another. All right. So if less machshava tvisa beklal, you cannot say you want to have a connection to God. If you have a deep and profound understanding of God, that will forge your connection. We can't say that. Because whatever we understand is limited within the frame of our intellectual possibilities. And God cannot be grasped by those limited possibilities. Because God is infinite and limitless, and we cannot imagine true infinity. We don't even know what true infinity means. The closest we get to true infinity is the figure eight, because it's never ending. I don't know why they don't just use a circle. Chassidus uses a circle, mathematics uses the number eight. But that's the only imagination we can have of infinity, because you can go around and around and around, or around and around and around and around. And in theory, never stop. It never ends. But we don't know what infinity looks like. We cannot fathom infinity. Where does the universe end? What happens after that? We cannot fathom these things. Because we don't begin. It's not that we're halfway there, three quarters there. The smarter you are, the closer you are to Hashem. Intellectuality and godliness have really nothing to do with one another. So therefore, you cannot grasp God intellectually. So how do we grasp God? Meaning, within what conventional envelope does divinity reside within our souls? So it can't be in Havana Vasoge, it can't be in understanding, and that's just fine, because Chachma is not Havana Vasoge. Chachma is beyond understanding. Chachma is the source of that. And Chachma is really in a state of bittul, because Chachma is in a state of self-abnegation. It doesn't feel itself, and it's not limited to the frame of human understanding, it's just a source for human understanding. Therefore, Chachma is an apt convention or envelope through which we actually can grasp God. So when godliness is embodied in our soul, it comes through which level? Chachma, the Chachma, the Atzilus. V'lachein, and because this is true, because Chachma is beyond intellectuality as we know it, and because that's how we grasp God, l'chein kol Yisrael, therefore all of Israel, afil ha'noshim v'ha'me'aretz, not that I was using verbiage of common at the day, the very, very few lettered and educated women once upon a time. Today, there are many educated women. But we talked about people who, for the longest period, we had many Jewish men who were ignorant and more Jewish women who were ignorant and a small amount of scholarly class, a small clerisy of people who really got it and understood it. And yet, all of the Jewish people equally were known to be ma'aminim b'Hashem. They all believed in Hashem. We didn't say that the rabbi believed more than the scholarly made. No, they all believe. When it comes to belief, when it comes to faith in Hashem, everybody is on equal footing. Well, how is that possible? The only way that makes sense is if we are to understand that understanding is not the way to get to God. Because otherwise, there would have to be a difference in faith. The wise scholar, the deep and profound thinker, would have to have a deeper connection to Hashem. The simpleton would have to have a weaker connection or a barely negligible connection. But in fact, they're all called ma'aminim b'Hashem. Because ha'emuna hu l'mayla min adas v'hasaga. Faith is not the sum total of an equation. It's not the result of intellectual activity or a cerebral conclusion. Faith is beyond that. It's l'mayla min adas. It's beyond an opinion. It's beyond my way of looking at things. It's beyond my grasp. And the Alter Rebbe brings a proof to this, that the idea of faith has nothing to do with intellectual activity or knowledge in the typical sense. And so people say, seeing is believing. And I say, that's ridiculous. Seeing is seeing. Believing is believing. How could seeing be believing? Why should seeing be believing? Then why is there a separate terminology for it? Because the Alter Rebbe brings a proof now from a pasuk in Mishlei, and interestingly, in the pasuk in Mishlei, the example of faith is, or the faith the way it's used here in this syntax, is foolishness beneath what we call the intellect. But that's of course not Alter Rebbe's point. Chas v'shalom. The point is that faith, the terminology faith, is not linked to intellectuality. Faith is not the sum total of understanding and grasping an idea cerebrally. So the pasuk says, "Ki pesi yamin l'chol davar." A fool believes everything. Va'arum, but the person who's cunning, yovin, that person understands. He's discerning. He knows what to accept, what not to accept, what's possible, what's not possible. The point, of course, is not that faith is stupid. Pesi is a fool. But the point is that when it comes to faith, it's not the byproduct of scholarship. It's not the result that's engendered through deep understanding and profound grasp of a concept. That's not what faith is about. We could see, scripturally speaking, that faith is considered the natural byproduct of that which is unintelligent, or that which lacks cerebral activity, a pesi, a fool. Now, that's not to say that faith is stupid, as certain atheists would like to have you believe, chas v'shalom. Because the truth is that even though we say pesi, pesi is a fool, believes everything, legabe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when it comes to God, shehu lemaylo min haseichel v'hadas, who is transcendent of intelligence, less machashav tfisa beklal, as we mentioned, no mind can grasp God, no mind is brilliant or profound enough to understand Hashem, and therefore hakoil, all are kipsoyim etzlo yizbarech, all are fools, we all are fools before Hashem. The greatest Einstein is a fool before Hashem. What is the fool? A fool is a person who doesn't get it. Everybody's laughing at him. He doesn't get it. Everybody else understands, and the fool doesn't understand. The fool doesn't have, in an extreme example, the ability to get it. He cannot even grasp. You try to explain to him that 2 plus 2 is 4, and therefore 3 plus 2 is 5. He doesn't get that. He doesn't understand. That's not, how did 2 plus 2, how did that go into 3? He doesn't get it. And people who get it, don't let him. What is he, some kind of fool? Did not understand that? Did he not think? Some people are not capable of thinking. He doesn't understand. He's a fool. His brain can't do that. You show him examples. He doesn't understand it. He counts up 3 apples and 2 apples. Yeah, it's talk of 5. But how did that happen? It's magic. He doesn't know how that happened. He can't understand how this neat example of 2 and 2 is 4, that's a neat example, and here is odd, it's off limits, it's 3 and 2. How did that? Doesn't get it. I don't get how he doesn't get it, but there are people who actually don't get it. People are fools. But guess what? All of us are fools before Hashem. None of us understand the profundity of God. It's beyond us. It's not within the realm of a possibility. So when we say pesi amelech al davar, the term pesi, Shlomo HaMelech means it in a disparaging way there. He says a fool believes everything. You have to have a little seichel. You have to be of intelligence, be discerning. You have to be able to analyze the situation and grasp it properly. That's what Shlomo HaMelech means there. But that's accurate in that frame. But the point is, we're exporting the idea of pesi and emunah, and we're saying, when we come to a reality that is hakol kipsiyim, which is plural over here, where everybody's a fool, if everybody's a fool, then nobody can grasp it. If nobody can grasp it, how do we get it then? How do we grasp God? How do we know, so to speak? So the Alter Rebbe says it's not an intelligent knowing. It's a knowing that comes from emunah, not lower than intelligence, but higher than intelligence, beyond the cerebral ability of a person. And this is kidichsiv, like it says in the book of Tillim, v'ani va'ar v'loy eda, I am empty, and I don't know. Behemos hayisi imach, I was like a behema, like a beast, but I was with you. V'ani tomed imach, I'm always with you, v'goymer. K'loymer, in other words, shebezeh sh'ani baru behemos, when I feel empty, totally in the dark, when I feel like a beast, like a behema, ani tomed imach, I can always be with you. Simply stated, when a person's relationship with God is the sum total of his or her understanding, when something that questions that, something that flies in the faith of the understanding comes, what happens to your faith? Your faith is thrown into turmoil. How could this be? If there is a God, how could this be? So the person stops believing. When does he believe? When everything fits neatly with his equation. The problem is, your equation's a non-starter. The problem is, we're talking about a reality that is beyond human fathomability. So how could it be that such and such would be? Because according to my understanding of what I call logic, or I call right, or I call good, such should not be the case. So we say to the person, what are you talking about? Your understanding, your logic is totally irrelevant. There's nothing that's not about you at all. Rather, it's about what the Eibishter wants, the Eibishter knows, and you have no way to understand that. I have no way to understand it. So then, one of two things happens. If my faith was based on what I understood, now my faith is weakened. But if my faith to begin with was based on behemah, I'm like a behemah by Hashem. I don't understand what God's doing. I never claimed to understand what God's doing. I was always in a state of darkness, so to speak. I always knew that whatever God does is beyond human fathomability. How do you function? How do you relate to God? My answer is faith. So if the answer is faith, even when there are things that challenge the human mind that seem to be totally out of sorts with what you understand, it defies, there's no problem. It in no way diminishes my relationship because my relationship was not based on understanding or lack thereof. So the only way to always be with Hashem is to be like a behemoth with Hashem, or to know you're a behemoth. The truth is that we're all behemoths, that we're all like the goat, and much, much more so. But just know you're a goat. As long as you know you're a goat who gets angry about the lack of cholent water, who's sure that the boss took it, as long as it's based on that kind of knowledge that you really don't know, not you should be a goat. The goat thinks he does know. Don't be a behemoth who thinks he does know. That behemoth is in trouble. That human animal who thinks that he understands God and therefore he or she defines what's good and what's bad, what's godly, what's ungodly, what's moral or what's immoral. The person like that is never going to be with God. But the person who knows I am like a beast, which means I don't understand, I don't claim to understand, it doesn't have to make sense to me. Because sense, logic, rhyme and reason, rationality, equations, that's not what that relationship to God is made of. Oh, well in that case, I'm always with God. Because no amount of challenge to my faith will ever take it away. There's a sefer called Yavin Metzula, which literally means like muddy abyss, muddy depths. It's taken out of Tilim, that language. And it's written by a Jew from Spain. And the Jew from Spain who was extremely wealthy and powerful and influential and had everything good in a material sense. And then the Inquisition came, but it was a slow process. The slow anti-Semitism was phased in. People don't realize it was 101 years of persecution. The dismembering of the golden age for Spanish Jews. And eventually he's left with nothing. He lost his money, he lost his health, he lost his wife, he lost his children. Everybody died, he's alone. And he cries out to Hashem and he writes this. He says, you took my wealth, you took my health, you took my family, you took my community, you took everything. But I'm not going to let go of you anyway. You're never going to lose me. No matter what you do to me, you're not going to lose me anyway. Where does that come from? That's pure faith. That's kebehemus. If his connection with Hashem would be based on philosophy, it's over. It's over. And oftentimes, people's philosophical understandings, which they think are so intellectual, are totally emotionally driven. I recently counseled a person who's a very smart guy, very smart person. And he's telling me about how certain problems in the world are not letting him sleep today. And he doesn't know why. Why? And I'm thinking and thinking and thinking and I'm thinking, I know why. He's not going to hear it. The reason is because his life just melted down. So because his life melted down, he's projecting his own sadness onto the world because he wants to be a lofty person, not a small person who crashes because of his own personal problems. So therefore, he projects it onto something else, onto something bigger. But in truth, what's going on is his own life is collapsing. And because his own life is collapsing, it's more comfortable subconsciously for him to blame that on Syria and Aleppo and humanity and so on and so forth. So why didn't that bother you yesterday? Rwanda happened 20 years ago. Why did that not let you sleep? Why only Syria doesn't let you sleep? The answer is because all the philosophies in the world, oftentimes, they boil down to one's own kishkas. So it's a personal thing. So it's not even so philosophical, ultimately. It's really very emotional a lot of times. But even if somebody were to be a great philosopher and they have the ability to totally remove themselves from the physical existence and reality that is they, not what's comfortable or uncomfortable, not what's pleasurable or the lack thereof, that's not what drives them. And they were to be totally devoted to philosophical pursuit and totally intelligent. Even then, if that would their relationship with God would be the sum total of their philosophical underpinnings, then ultimately that loss, that kind of connection to Hashem is prone to collapse and prone to loss. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, once we understand that we are behemoths, then we're always with Hashem. Then everything, so to speak, works out. But what's the point that Alter Rebbe made here? The point is that faith is not a byproduct of intellectuality. It's a byproduct of something which is transcendent of that. And where does it reside? It resides in Chochmah. The Alter Rebbe sets out to give you a lucid understanding. That's the system. We talked about the system. Here's the grid. This is the grid we're attached to. We're all attached to the power grid, which gives our faith. Excuse me. The power grid that we're all plugged into, the power grid that our faith comes from, this is the notion of Chochmah. Precisely because Chochmah, in its essential definition, is not wisdom. It's not logic, and it's not understanding, and it's not rationality. Chochmah, in its purest, most organic sense, Chochmah is the reality that is beyond what we can understand. That's the idea of a Yiddish neshama. And that's the idea of emuna. And therefore, when it comes to emuna, the scholarly and the simpleton, when it comes to emuna, everybody's equal. Now, which doesn't mean we shouldn't try to study and learn and engage our hearts and minds, because Hashem gave us a heart and mind. And therefore, we have to know that it's not enough to be a behemah, you have to be a mensch also. And to be a mensch and to be a human, you have to develop a healthy understanding of divinity and maximize your potential, push that to the envelope to its limit. And you have to have healthy emotions, and you have to have a sense of fervor and a sense of passion and a sense of awe. All those things are necessary. It's all part of avodat Hashem. But the foundation of it all is faith. And faith is transcendent of all that. And the interesting thing happens that faith then is not a byproduct of our efforts. If this is all true, where does faith come from? It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a hereditary thing. It's something organic. It's something natural. But if it's hereditary and organic and natural, so what can I do to access it? Oh, so this Chassidus says there are many things to do. First of all, learning Torah in general helps reveal our faith. Learning Pnimiyas HaTorah, learning the esoteric and mystical aspects of Torah especially, helps reveal our faith. Being connected to a Rebbe and a Tzaddik helps connect our, reveal our faith. Going to the Oyel helps connect our faith. There are things that do that help us connect to who we are, but doesn't create it. It just reveals it. All of these things that we do reveal the intrinsic faith that belongs to every one of us. So we say things like eating non-kosher food, chas v'shalom, it's metamtem alev. It makes the heart unfeeling and thick and unsensitive. In other words, it makes you unable to tap into the inner reservoir of faith that is naturally yours. Behaving inappropriately will rob us or take us or take away from us the faith that should intrinsically and naturally be ours. But it does not create the faith. The faith was always there. We're born with it. And that's the meaning where the Alter Rebbe starts this chapter of Tanya by telling us that ultimately emuna is an inheritance that we received from our patriarchs and matriarchs. Because of their Mesiras Nefesh, because of their devotion and sacrifice, they merited to draw forth for all their progeny till the end of time this connection to Hashem that every one of us has, which we call emuna. So in different words, when it comes to the currency of the eye, it's about seeing. You don't feel with your eye, you don't smell with your eye, you see with your eye. When it comes to the idea of touch, so the currency is of that relationship to the world around is touch. So this soft, hard, hot, cold, things I touch. When it comes to hearing, it's a different currency. The currency of hearing. The currency of hearing is from a range of sounds, a Doppler effect, and so on and so forth. When it comes to understanding, that's something else. That the currency is intellect. When it comes to feeling, currency is the heart. So you come to a person, say, why are you in love with a guy? She says, I don't know, I just love him. So that makes no sense. She says, I know. So what? Who says it has to make sense? Or you come to somebody and say, you know, based on this equation, you should be in love and get married. This is, you're right, the equation is great, but it's just not there. I don't have any Meshichas Alev. I'm not emotionally involved. It doesn't do it for me. Why not? I don't know why not. So the currency of emotions is not the currency, it's not the currency of the intellect. And not always could you change over currency. This is the currency they accept. You can't pay in the world of emotion with intellect. Intellectual currency doesn't work here. Sometimes you could translate it, sometimes you could transfer it, sometimes you could change one currency into the other currency. Oftentimes you can't. So what's the currency of the soul? How does the soul relate? With touching? No, you don't touch God. You taste God? Is he sweet or sour? You color code him? Is he seeing him? Is he blue, green, yellow? Ridiculous. So what is it? Is it emotion? I feel. Anayamaisa, I feel. You feel, that makes reality. You feel, it's your own selfish feelings. I feel this is a good thing. I don't know what that means. What do you feel? Who are you? You feel it's a good thing, it's good for you. Doesn't mean it's what's intrinsically right. Doesn't mean it's objectively correct. Person, I understand that's the currency of intellect. What does that have to do with God? The currency of intellect cannot be spent in order to acquire divinity. So how does the neshama then express itself? And the answer is with something called faith, which is a deeply seated certitude that is not emotional, that is not intellectual, that is not seen, felt, or touched. It's faith. Now, people tend to use the terminology, well, I believe, on things that are actually don't really make so much sense. And a person can say, well, you believe that, what do you say, A, B, C, and D? You have a point, I don't know. I believe if Israel would abandon the settlements, there would be peace. Really? How about A, B, C, D, E, go a list of 300 reasons why that's not true? Well, that's, I have to think about that. I never heard that. That's interesting that you mentioned those points. So people, when they use to say, I believe, they're usually postulating their own ideas. And they want to project their ideas in a way which is not fully rational, and they can't make a fully rational argument. So, I believe this to be the case. And those kind of beliefs, quote unquote, can easily be demolished. Because they're based really on nothing. Or they're based on flimsy evidence. But what happens when our Yid says, I believe? I believe is not an assumption. I believe is a statement of certitude. If I believe, you can bring me 1,000 proofs. You can show me whatever you want. I don't care. I believe. You will not weaken my faith, because it's the exact opposite of how it's used in English. And this is the problem, incidentally, we're talking about faith and talking about spirituality in English, that people have certain notions in their head when they hear the word belief. Belief means one thing to them, but that's not what it means in Torah. Reincarnation means one thing to them, but it's not what it means in Torah. So it comes to reincarnation, they're thinking a Christian idea, they're thinking a Buddhist idea or a Zen idea. It has nothing to do with reincarnation in Torah. So people say, do you believe in reincarnation? I say, no. You don't? What about Sefer HaGulma? I said, what you call reincarnation, I don't believe in. Well, the famous story of an atheist once came along and said, I want you to know, he said to the rabbi, I don't believe in God. The rabbi said, I'll tell you a little secret. The God you don't believe in, I don't believe in either. You just don't know anything about God. Because the currency here is something that's far beyond the realities of everyday life. And the problem is a language like English, or really all languages, are created out of human experiences. We call heat that which we have experienced. Or then we have a way of measuring cold or heat, which is far beyond what a human being can experience, so we use a different system. We call it Kelvin or some other system of heat that cannot be felt. But we have a way of measuring it, a logical way of being able to measure what that means. So we can give it a name. But when it comes to realities that we have no way of measuring, we have no way, it's not within the revelatory reality of a person. This is not within which we're able, where we can visualize or see, or scientifically analyze, so we don't have words for that. So the word belief is a meaningless word. It's not really the translation of emunah. The word soul and neshama is not really a translation. And that's why you can't translate Torah into any language for real. The only way to really understand Torah is to study Torah and to use a host of words and things which there are no words for, to be able to have some inkling of what we're really talking about. And that's the power grid that all of us are plugged into by the very dint of our being. Because we are. Because we are, that's why Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, automatically, this is an intrinsic part of us. And that's all for today.